Today on Barca Talk. The FCB first team was rested and in full force to face Rayo Vallecano in La Liga and came back for the win after Rayo scored early. Lionel Messi is returning to international duty for Argentina. FC Barcelona B played Villarreal B in Segunda B, and several B team players got first team caps in the Supercopa de Catalunya, losing the trophy to Girona in a 1-0 defeat. First up, a little bit of news. Ernesto Valverde deflected in response to questions about the future of Ivan Rakitic in his press conference ahead of the Rayo Vallecano match, saying, "I'm not thinking about whether Rakitic is here or not next season, not him or anybody else." Valverde has a clear preference for the Croatian international in his lineups, but the pending arrival of Ajax star Frankie de Jong next season has raised questions about Rakitic. He's still on contract through the next two seasons, and he has said that he wants to stay at Barcelona, while also making it clear that he would like to have his current deal sweetened, if not extended. Speaking of transfers from Ajax, Matthijs de Ligt is back in the headlines after the Dutch side knocked Real Madrid out of the Champions League. Barcelona president Josep Bartomeu was asked about de Ligt on Ser Catalunya Radio, and he admitted nothing more than that de Ligt is on the table. Ramon Planas, Barcelona's assistant technical secretary, was spotted along with longtime scout Bojan Krkić Sr. at the Bernabeu for the Champions League match, presumably to monitor De Jong and De Ligt's performances. At only 19 years old, De Ligt is garnering a lot of interest from bigger clubs, and for those imagining him at Barcelona, he seems a strong candidate to replace Gerard Piqué in the future. Germany boss Jogi Löw is making moves with the future in mind. Sport reported that Löw has already spoken personally to the Bayern Munich trio of Mats Hummels, Jerome Boateng, and Thomas Müller to let them know that he won't be calling them up anymore for international duty. This signals that Löw is pushing for a shift from one generation to the next, and Barcelona's Marc-Andre ter Stegen might also benefit from this. In a recent press conference, Löw praised ter Stegen as well as their current captain and number one, André Neuer, but said that ter Stegen would have opportunities in the Euro 2020 qualifications. Lionel Messi will play for Argentina in their upcoming friendlies against Venezuela and Morocco later this month. After a disappointing World Cup last summer, many feared that Messi had finally had it and hung up his international boots. The Albiceleste have gone without Messi in the last 8 months, playing six games without him. The friendlies will be played relatively nearby in Madrid and Tangier, so Barcelona fans worried about a jet-lagged Messi coming back from international duty can take comfort in that. More on that in a moment. Hello and welcome to Barca Talk. I'm Brian Henderson, coming to you from Buffalo, New York. And joining me, as always, is Gabriel Quiroga in Madrid.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. This is take two of the day because I had some hard drive issues and technological issues that I had to sort out. So this is the second time we're going through some of this for us. Just the first minutes, though. But I'm okay. Everything's fine. And this is going to be another great episode of Barca Talk, I am sure. How are Absolutely. You doing?
I'm doing well. Serenity now, Brian. Serenity
yes, now, right know? Now. Right right now.
I'm doing well. You know, I can't complain. Real Madrid is out of their Champions League, so there will be a new Champions League champion.
For sure.
That's going on here in Madrid. That's been obviously the biggest talking point that they accomplished the triplete, you know, but obviously the wrong type, you know.
So, yeah, the anti-triplete.
So, of course, as a culé, you know, as I talked earlier with some friends and you as well, we are over the moon about this as a culé, right? Because we like seeing our rivals in chaos. So it's a lot of fun from that point of view. So that's what's going on here in Madrid.
Right, and it's been a good week overall for us because we got a nice win on Saturday at Rayo Vallecano. Was it nice or not? We'll talk about that more later. But we did get the win. We got the 3 points. We're still on top of the table. And bonus, Real Madrid is done for the season. I mean, they mathematically have hopes of doing better in the league, but it's very unlikely that they'll mount a real comeback in the league, especially with just these losses. It seems like they're in a bit of disarray. You know, Solari is probably not going to last much longer there.
Sure.
Maybe the remainder of the season.
So the biggest thing here too, Brian, is, you know, they don't have any competitions for 6 months, which is crazy.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because not till next September, October,
what
you know, to fight for, to essentially. You know?
Oh, to fight for, right.
Yeah, to
right.
fight for, sorry, to fight for, right? Yes. So the other thing too is, you know, with the team that they have, you know, a lot of players know that they're going to be gone next season. So how hard are they going to fight for fourth place Champions League for a team that they're not going to be on next year?
Well, it all, I mean, your own individual performance still is important because let's say you're looking at leaving, you know, you want to make sure that you're looking good to wherever you're going.
Sure. But I mean, it's just psychology with this, right? I mean, this is the earliest they've been out of competitions. And, you know, that's basically the talking point here in Madrid is that, you know, how difficult is it going to be for them to get that fourth spot? I mean, there could be a possibility that they, some of the players just don't perform as well as they do.
Yeah. And now I'm running through a scenario in my head where Real Madrid is in the Europa League next year.
Yeah, exactly.
How great would that be?
That would be amazing. I mean, I'm telling you, Ryan, it's not that far-fetched because I'm telling you there is a lot of chaos going on in that locker room, especially with the divide that's going on with the veterans, especially the veterans that haven't gotten playing time, like Isco, Marcelo, especially Toni Kroos, who didn't look that good as we talked about him, Mr. Uninterested, you know, in the Clásicos.
Yeah.
And, and then obviously Sergio Ramos calling out the players that aren't playing. So again, like I said, Brian, I think it's a definite situation that's happening. And again, I couldn't be happier as a Barca fan seeing this because, you know, they're going to bring back Mourinho. They just don't have any solutions right now. And, you know, they have about 3 months where nothing is, you know, they're not fighting for anything, which is very rare for them.
Right. Well, I guess the only thing they are fighting for is to try and secure that Champions League spot. So, you know, you can always make goals for yourself.
Sure.
That's always an option.
Yeah.
But this one news item that we mentioned at the top of the show, we wanted to talk about a little bit more, the fact that Leo Messi is going to return. He will ride again in the Argentina jersey coming up later this month.
Yeah, it's crazy because I definitely thought it was over, you know, for sure, just with the past experiences he had, especially in the World Cup, the way he's been treated by the AFA and, you know, just the past tournaments that he's had with them. I thought he was over, but, you know, keeps calling him, you know, he still wants to get that big trophy, you know, with Argentina. I totally understand that. So, you know, hopefully this season, the Copa de America, I really hope that Argentina gets to the final and that he can actually win a big trophy with the team. So that kind of talk of Maradona or Messi kind of dies down. You know, obviously my feelings about Maradona, and I think this is a good thing. But also I don't want him to get overexhausted during the summer as well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword for me.
Right. Well, and also apparently the AFA had begged him to come back.
Yeah, essentially they definitely want him to come back, right? And now with this new coaching change, obviously with the debacle that was in the World Cup, they had this big kind of organization shakeup. And so that was the last keystone to bring Messi back in and basically to have this coach instill that Messi likes. And again, this kind of goes back to the same thing that's kind of what's happening with Barca. It's almost they give Messi too much power and they try to appease him so much that sometimes you lose focus of the overall team success and performances. So it's interesting to see what the formation that they're going to put in Argentina. And of course, Messi's going to be doing the same type of playmaking and all over the field that he does for Barca, that he does for Argentina. And I would even say more for Argentina.
Yeah, well, you would expect that. But also, they have been playing a number of games without him. And I assume that's with the new manager, Scaloni.
Yep.
So I would hope that they're going to work him into whatever they've been developing there rather than, you know, the minute he shows up, suddenly everything's out the window and now it's just give the ball to Messi and everything will be fine. You know, that kind of denial that we've seen in action so many times with both Barcelona and Argentina.
I think it really comes down to the striker. So whoever that striker is for Argentina, if it's Icardi, for example, not Higuain, someone that is clinical up front, I think that will definitely help their run in the Copa de America because, you know, Messi's going to play make and make those passes and those guys will be able to do that. But it's the finishing that's been the problem from other players that's denied them from the Copa de America final, the World Cup final. And hopefully we'll see, you know, I'm interested to see how Icardi does with the Argentina national team and Messi, because I haven't seen that really pair up that often, but that'll be an interesting dynamic as well. But I think it really just comes down to the number nine or the striker that they have up top.
Yeah. And that's always going to be, That's always going to be the thing. And in these upcoming friendlies, Agüero is out. It doesn't mean that he would be out for Copa America necessarily, but he's not been called up for these couple of friendlies that Messi definitely will be playing in. Well, he's called up, and you assume that he'll be playing. I mean, you don't call up Leo Messi to sit on the bench.
Sure, sure. But the other thing with Agüero, he's a great striker, right? And he works well with Messi, but the problem with him in the Argentina national team is consistency. He's always knocked up, injured, and he doesn't play a lot of games in a row, you know, and that's part of the problem with the chemistry that they've had, especially in the World Cup. I mean, Agüero had some great goals, but he just sometimes cannot play all those matches in a row. And I think that's going to happen too, especially the long season. You know, he plays in the Premier League. He gets knocked a lot, and we'll see what happens this summer. I mean, I'm going to be pulling for them to win the Copa de America because I'm such a big Messi fan. I think that would be, you know, that's the last thing that's kind of holding him back to being one of the ultimate greatest in the debate talk, you know, is to win that international trophy for Argentina.
Yeah, it's not enough to deliver for club. You need some country as well.
Exactly.
It's kind of a shame. I mean, it's such a shame. If he doesn't win at least one pretty good trophy, it doesn't necessarily have to be a World Cup, although, you know, World Cup would be nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, a Copa America, something like this, just to give him a little bit of that country credibility in history. Because if he doesn't, he could go down as sort of one of the greatest players, but maybe who didn't achieve in this particular area as much as you would have expected. But, you know, for me, it always comes back to the fact that it's a team sport. And you can't put everything on one person, no matter how great they are. I mean, he wins so much with Barcelona. And yes, a lot of times he's the one who's leading that charge and he's keeping a team afloat at times. But if you're going to win major trophies, you got to have the other 10 guys at minimum doing more and helping in the effort.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But, you know, how the pundits are, you know, they always put Pelé and Maradona up higher because they won the World Cup. And just like you said, I totally agree. It's a team sport. But again, because they were the best players of their era and they won those competitions, they get placed higher. I think it's obviously a different era now. I just think that with Champions League and La Liga is just far superior competition than what Maradona or Pelé faced. It's a no-brainer that Messi, to me, is the greatest player of all time. But again, you know, Messi has brought them to the final, you know. But again, if we dissect those games, you know, like, for example, in the World Cup final, Higuain misses a chance in regular time that could have won them the World Cup. And then in Copa de America, you know, Messi missed a penalty kick and the team just kind of crumbled in that pressure moment kind of a thing. And Chile won. And so, you know, he's been to the final. So he's been so close, but him and the team have been unable to finish that.
Yeah. Well, anyway. As we've mentioned several times now, we will be in Barcelona for the Atletico match on April 6th. The date and time have actually been confirmed now, finally, and we'll be at the game. And the day after the game, Gabriel and I will be putting on our first ever Barca Talk live show. So if you're coming on that trip, we hope to see you at the live show on Sunday, April 7th. If you're not coming on the trip, but you're going to be in Barcelona that weekend, we hope to see you on Sunday, April 7th. We've secured a venue. So we're going to be doing this event at 3 p.m. Barcelona time at the Red Garter in Barcelona. Very exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. We got everything locked up because finally they announced the time and the day. So it is Saturday night. It's going to be a partida. So it's 8:45 local time, which is awesome. I always love the nighttime game. It'll have that feeling, especially we'll be able to get to the stadium beforehand and enjoy the festivities. But again, it's going to be so much fun. We're going to have the live show and then we'll have like our kind of after party hangout with everyone that's there. So that'll be a lot of fun as well.
Yes, and I was just speaking with Max earlier today, Max Bleuer, our Barca B correspondent, and he invited Megan and I, and I'm sure he'll extend the invite to you. I don't know if he has yet, but they've invited us to go to do an evening visit to Sagrada Familia Sunday evening. So other people who are coming to the live show, you're not invited to that, but of course, you know, you can go if you want. I'm not extending that out to everybody else. I'm just saying that we're going to do the live show, we're going to have a little bit of party, and then I'm going to go to one of my favorite places on the planet, La Sagrada Familia. So that's good. I'm excited about that too. It'll be nice to see it in the evening with the light coming in and at that time of day.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like I told you before, we're 27 days away. I get to jump in your arms, essentially, Ricky Pugh style. So,
you know, it's funny. I've been thinking about this. Like, when I finally see Gabriel in real life, like, are we going to hug?
Of course.
We're going to hug. Okay, good.
Brothers got a hug.
Yeah. You know? I wasn't sure like how professional it would be. Hello, nice to finally meet you in person. Yes.
Yeah, shake hands.
Yes.
No, come on, man. First of all, we're Barca brothers. Second of all, we've been doing this thing. This has been our baby for a long time now. So come on.
Yes.
Brothers got a hug
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of brothers and sisters from other mothers and misters, we have someone to bestow upon the guard, the Barca Talk Guard of Honor today. This week, we're recognizing Kenya, who's been a supporter of the show on Patreon for a year now. Speaking of how long we've been doing this, coincidentally, Kenya lives not far from the house that I lived in as a young boy down in Southern California. So this is just a small display of gratitude. Thank you, Kenya, for your continuing support. You're a part of what makes this podcast happen. And you can help make it happen, too. You should support the podcast through Patreon. Just $3 a month will get you a private feed for the show that you can set up in most podcast apps. And the episodes in that feed are free of the few commercials that we do have. And you'll also get our Thursday bonus episode in that feed at the $6 a month level or higher. And any other bonus material we put on directly onto the Patreon page. Each tier of support comes with some amount of Barca Talk merchandise, and we have a link to Patreon in the show notes, but if that link isn't working, just go to barcatalk.net, click on support the show to link through to Patreon. The first team, and I am using air quotes there, had a match last week, midweek, that generally went under the radar. It was the Catalan Super Cup, a modest one-game tournament organized by the Catalan Football Federation, played between the two best Catalan clubs in the previous year's league table. Since 2014, when this format was introduced, the game has always pitted Barcelona against Espanyol. But last year, Girona finished one spot higher than Espanyol, making this their first appearance in the Super Cup. And Barcelona lost 1-0 to Girona after Stuani scored on a penalty kick given up by the Barça B midfielder Alex Collado. Most of the primary starters in Valverde's squad were given some extra rest, while 12 B-team players were called up for the match, though not all of them played. The odd man out, the 13th notable choice, was Jean-Claire Todibo, who's been given the number 6 in the first team, but who has yet to play any minutes in what you might call a proper first-team match. He's 19 years old and seems to have all the promise you'd hope for, so you might expect to find him playing for Barça B. There's just one problem. His contract is with the first team, so he can't play for the B team. So there he was in the Catalan Super Cup, playing in the Busquets central midfield role rather than the central defending role he was signed up to play. You wouldn't have guessed it, though, from watching him play. He looked as intelligent on and off the ball and as incisive with his forward passes as any promising pivot. Apart from Todibo, the lineup was a lot like those you see in the early rounds of Copa del Rey. 4 B-team players, some secondary first-team players. We had Malcolm, Murillo, Alenia, Boateng, and at least one first-team starter to sort of babysit the rest of the guys. Umtiti got babysitting duty for this one, and Cillessen was in goal, so that adds some extra supervision. Carlos Alenia probably had the best chances to score. In the 75th minute, he took a shot with his head that bounced off the crossbar, and he had a couple other good chances as well, but couldn't get it in the net. In terms of chemistry, though, he was probably the most well-situated and comfortable player, being familiar with all of the B-team players from earlier on in the season while he was still getting minutes with the B-team, and the first-team players who he's getting to know much better now. Now, Barça B proper did have a game in Segunda B on Sunday against Villarreal B and won the week before against Ontinyent. Here now with a report on both of those is our Barça B correspondent, Max Bleuer.
Without doubt, the biggest news of the last couple of weeks has been that Barça B have actually won a game. The 3-0 victory over Ontinyent was the boys' first win in 5 and only second in 10 matches. The game started off at a frantic pace, but was all over by midway through the first half. In the 10th minute, left-back Juan Miranda put in a low, hard cross that an Ontinyent defender was only able to divert into his own net. And barely a minute later, Juan was at it again with a pass to Alex Collado, who stuck it home at the near post from the edge of the box. And the left-back rounded off a man-of-the-match performance in the 23rd minute when he tapped into an open net at a set-piece to add his first goal of the season to his two assists. A few minutes before that, Iñaki Peña had guessed the right way to save a penalty after a pretty ropey decision from the ref, possibly out of sympathy to an Ontinyent that Barça were absolutely murdering. The second half was a procession, with Ontinyent never seriously able to make a game of it. We did, though, at least get to see another exhibition in midfield by Riqui Puig, while Sam Maguin also got a start in midfield. The week after, Barça travelled 180 miles down the coast to face Villarreal B in a crucial clash, as García Pimienta's boys fight for a playoff place. Despite another strong performance, Barça succumbed to a 2-1 loss. Once again, it was a question of dominating midfield, but showing the callowness in both areas that has prevented Barça from getting near the top of the table all season. Villarreal got an early goal on the break, and subsequently dropped back to leave Barça to do all the running. And despite having almost all of possession, Barça didn't manage to create any decent chances until Montu banged one in from 25 yards in the 35th minute. The holding midfielder had already had a decent shot from range earlier, and the fact that Villarreal were playing so deep, plus the number of men they were gathering behind the ball, meant that a hit from distance was always going to be one of Barça's best chances of scoring. Surprisingly, Oriol Busquets was left out of the starting lineup for the second game in a row. To be fair, we shouldn't get too upset with PME for this decision, as Oriol's replacement at the back of midfield was Montu, who bossed the game for Barça. Perhaps the clubs decided to be extra cautious with Oriol in the wake of his knee injury. He had 45 minutes for the first team in the Supercopa de Catalunya in midweek, and so it could well be that his knee isn't up to 2 games in 4 days. All in all, it was a very good performance from Barça away against the second place team in the group. The difference between playing against a fellow B-side and a team of more experienced players was clear. Barça were able to impose their style in a way that they sometimes aren't against more cynical players that are prepared to use the dark arts to disrupt the boys' flow. Yet the team weren't able to create any clear-cut goal-scoring opportunities, and in searching for them, left themselves open at the back. Both of Villarreal's goals came from the Yellow Submarine winning possession and quickly breaking forward, with the winner coming in the 77th minute after an incisive break cut through Barça's defence and left Simón free to slip the ball under Iñaki from inside the box. Still, there is no shame in going down away to a team in the top two, and the performance was encouraging as we head into the final straight of the season. Off the pitch, and Sport are reporting that the club has made an offer of a contract extension to Barça B striker Rafa Mojica. The Barcelona-based newspaper reckoned that 3 La Liga clubs are following the Canarian centre-forward's contract situation, although Betis is the only one that is named. The article claims that Barça's initial offer has not impressed Mojica's entourage, but that both sides are keen to come to an agreement to keep the striker at the club for many more seasons. It also claims that the club is deliberating whether to renew Mojica and promote him to the first team next season, or send him on loan to a first division club, implying that he definitely won't be playing at Barça B next year. To be honest, Sport seems, not for the first time, to be getting a little bit ahead of itself here. Mojica has grown into the season, but he's hardly set the world alight, having scored just 5 goals, 3 of them in the same game. Moreover, the January signing of Kevin Prince-Boateng is a clear signal that the club does not have much faith in Mojica, or Alderweireld, at least in the short term. What Mojica needs is another full season with Barça B, hopefully in Segunda, in which he scores 20 or more goals and bangs down the doors to the first team. Promoting him just for the sake of having youth team players in the first team runs the risk of thrusting him in too early to a level he's not ready for and burning him up. Mojica and his teammates will be in action again next weekend at the Mini Estadi for the big derby against Espanyol B, before hitting the road to face Club Deportivo Ebro the following week.
All right, now I want to pivot to Champions League. And because the round of 16 in Champions League is half over, and the field isn't quite shaping up the way some would have thought, Tottenham eliminated Borussia Dortmund, and the odds were in favor of that. But the remaining matches all involved a comeback from the first leg. Porto coming back from 2-1 to send Roma home, Manchester United scoring 3 in the Parc des Princes, and knocking out PSG on away goals. And of course, the great pleasure of Ajax and Barcelona fans alike, Ajax come to the Bernabeu down a goal and score 4 to eliminate Real Madrid. And I looked this up, Real Madrid have not left the Champions League this early since the 2009-2010 tournament. And do you know who knocked them out?
I don't. Maybe Ajax.
It was Lyon.
Oh, Lyon. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Conspiracy theory in the works.
Yeah.
I don't think Lyon's going to knock us out. But so we're going to be going into our second leg against Lyon this coming week. That scoreless draw in the first leg makes it a clean slate. But what does Barcelona have to do differently in this match to stay on track?
In a word, Brian, this is muy complicado, or two words, actually. Right? Because we just got news basically today that Dembele is injured from last night's match.
I saw something about that. He has some hamstring issues.
Yes. So that puts a monkey wrench in the plans, because if he plays, Brian, then I feel very confident that we'll have the goals and we'll pull through. But if he doesn't, it's going to be a very, very tough match, because that means Coutinho is going to start.
Right.
And that makes it super complicated, because as we're going to talk about in our Rayo summary here about Coutinho's performance. But again, it's really about us, Brian, being ready to go, going fast, using the field, doing what we do, and we should be fine. But without Dembele, we're kind of limited, because we're going to go back to the same thing that we did in the first half against Rayo, the match against Lyon, and that is Messi dependence through the middle and hoping to get a goal from Suarez.
Right. And well, I guess the other simpler answer would be just score some goals.
Exactly. That is the simple answer, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at that first leg, right? I mean, we talked about this, 25 shots, 5 on target, which already is not a good ratio. It means that a lot of those shots were either poorly taken or low probability shots to begin with. And so that's already not good. But then when you get 5 on target, you want at least 1 to go in.
Sure.
So score a goal. Score 2 goals.
Yeah, I think, you know, the good thing that I think that happened, especially from the week that was with Manchester United knocking off Paris, Ajax knocking off Real Madrid, and then, you know, Porto and Roma, is that I hope it was a wake-up call that they have to be extremely focused against Lyon and be on top of their game. If we're on top of their game, Lyon cannot touch us, right? I mean, we should be that superior. And I really hope with the rest, and hopefully kind of using Rayo's game last night as kind of the, you know, I don't know, scrimmage game before the Champions game that you're really focused on, that they're ready to go and they're focused seeing all these other teams get eliminated, because now it is completely wide open once we advance for us to be the favorites to win the Champions.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the rest of the field is on our end. You know, there are still some pretty good sides in there. You know, the Man City is still in the running for sure. Juventus, Atletico, I would go with Atletico there.
Me too.
Bayern and Liverpool, both pretty strong. Maybe Liverpool would be the stronger, but they're also going in on a scoreless draw from the first leg. And so I think, you know, there are definitely still some good teams, but yeah, if we get through this round, I think we would definitely be among the favorites.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say if we get through and everything kind of, I would say the tough one I would say to predict right now is the Bayern Liverpool one, because I can go either way. But let's just say for argument's sake, it's Liverpool and I'd like to go through, then I definitely think we are the top or the favorites along with Manchester City.
Yeah. Oh, Man City.
Yeah.
Man City Barcelona final under Pep's Man City. That would be a good game.
I would be very scared.
Or even a semifinal.
Yeah.
Quarters. Yeah. Either way.
But see, I would prefer facing Man City in a home and away place, because at least it gives you more options.
Right.
You know? In a one game off, oof, that is anything can go, you know?
Exactly.
And anyone would know, especially you know, how he's developed Man City through the years, how to bottle up Messi and what we would do from that, you know. That's why, you know, Dembele is so important for us, because when he plays on the right, Brian, I don't know if you've seen in the last 3 weeks, we score goals.
Yes, exactly. We do score goals. And I think a lot of it also has to do with particularly when Semedo is at right back. They have this really nice connection now that, for instance, Sergio Roberto doesn't have with Dembele on the right. You know, we saw it on Saturday, you know, Semedo sending Dembele downfield with a nice long ball that he knows he can get to, and vice versa. Semedo making those runs in and Dembele playing him in with the through ball. A lot of a really nice connection between those two. But with him injured, we're not going to have any of that.
Exactly. I mean, it's good to see that partnership develop even more, because as we talked about through the season, in the beginning of the season, it was very touchy, right? It was not working. A lot of offsides calls, but now it's really working. It's clicking. And the speed that they both have. I mean, you saw Semedo's move down the corner, how he's able to now, he's starting to implement the Dembele move, the cutback, you know, right. And that is starting to add another role, another wrinkle into his arsenal of attacking now. And that's a couple times against Rayo, he was able to break free. And so, yeah, like you said, they're starting to develop a nice kind of relationship there. But again, you know, when Valverde chooses not to have Dembele or Malcolm, let's say, on that right side, we are very predictable. And I'm really kind of nervous about this, especially with the injury that I know Valverde is going to go with Coutinho. We may be bottled up in the first half, and I really hope he's open to making those changes at halftime, you know, making those sooner than later.
Yes. And I think that's actually a really good opportunity to pivot and just start drilling down into the Rayo Vallecano match. So Rayo Vallecano came to the Camp Nou in 19th place on Saturday. A team battling against relegation can always be a dangerous team, and Rayo did in fact show their teeth. Raul de Tomas put them on the board first when a counter found him running up on Piqué and Semedo, and when he got Semedo wrong-footed, he took the opportunity to slot a nice finish past Ter Stegen in the 24th minute. Barcelona kept cool, though, and equalized 14 minutes later on a headed goal from Piqué off of an exquisite ball in from Messi on a free kick. Two more came in the second half. Messi put away a penalty kick, and Luis Suarez scored in the primo football play of the game. But to begin, the starting lineup definitely had some overtones of saving players for Lyon.
So going into this match, Brian, what would you, if you were the manager, what would you have done? Would you have gone your strongest pure 11 for the first half, or would you have more subbed those players using the bench more? What would have been your kind of your opinion on this?
I would have started with a weaker starting lineup, but with my heavy guns on the bench.
Interesting.
Mainly because of Lyon coming, but
yeah.
Yeah. Just off the top of my head, that's what I would have done.
Okay. So I would have done the opposite, I think. I think I would have gone with strongest 11 with Dembele starting, Rakitic, get that momentum, get three goals, and then make those sub at halftime.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, I have here Vidal again. He is a good second half player, but for him to play more than 65 minutes for us in midfield just cannot happen. And you see, you know, Ernesto Valverde was praising him after the match. He had a great match, and I didn't see that. You know, for me, he just doesn't do enough, right? Yes, he made some good tackles. Yes, he had good passing accuracy, but how many times did his, you know, through balls or his ability to see the play develop, help us in attack? It didn't. And again, it was the same thing, Brian, with this attacking of Messi middle going left. How many times did he was surrounded by three players?
Right. A lot of times. And as far as the Vidal thing goes, I mean, I think Vidal actually did have a very good match for what he is out there to do. I think that his role is to do exactly what he was doing in this match. Now we could talk about whether that's a role that we want filled. Valverde certainly does, I think. You know, someone who's going to go out there and just recover the ball, who's going to get in guys' faces, who's going to use his strength, who's going to use his physicality to, well, not quite dominate, but assert a certain kind of domination over the midfield and to potentially draw players away, but he's not there for those great through balls. He's not there to put crosses in, clearly. And if he is, then yeah, he had a terrible game. But if he's there to make tackles and if he's there to, you know, clip at the heels of the opposing players, then yeah, he did have a good game.
I mean, I agree with that, but at the same time, I just feel that you're kind of making a statement with the lineup and the attitude of the first half, right? The first half was very malaise, you know, for the most part. I mean, we did have opportunities. We were knocking on the door, but overall, I mean, your body language, you know, the body language they were portraying, just, it seemed as though they didn't want to get hurt, right? They didn't want to do too much to overextend themselves. And I think that's kind of the wrong attitude to have, because I think that's where more bad things are going to happen. Now, I wish Dembele would have started. I wish Rakitic would have started. And I really wish, especially if we would have used that right side, gone up 3 goals and then make those subs. We make a Malcolm sub. We put Vidal. Then I'm completely happy with that, because you have something on video that you can say, look, we rode this momentum. We ran Rio out of the first half and we're good to go. We're ready for Lyon. And I would have more confidence. Now, he did make second half adjustments and we did win the game. So that is good, because we keep Atletico at bay. But just for me, I would treat this almost as in NFL, for the third preseason match, you play all your starters for the first half and then you make those changes because you want to get some momentum going into the next match.
Right. Go out hard, get something to bank it, and then make some changes.
Exactly. You know, and this match, for example, I would have loved to see Malcolm get 45 plus.
Instead of the 5 that he got.
Exactly. And also, I just, you know, we're going to talk about this, you know, in a second, but just the Coutinho debate. I mean, what are we going to do with this guy?
Well, I guess the argument is that you got to just keep playing him and hope that he finds his form.
But I mean, how many other players have this type of opportunity where they keep rolling out, that he keeps starting? And Brian, you know, I was reading on Twitter and other articles that are saying that he's not able to do his move, right? And I told you, I think one of the reasons he's not able to get his move is because Messi's in the way.
Right.
Right, because Messi's drawing that. So why not put Coutinho on the right side?
Sure.
You know?
He's also good on the right.
He is good on the right, and it'll give him more space. I mean, I know he won't be able to do his patented move, but at least maybe have more teeth in his attack. Because, Brian, how many times did he pass the ball where you're like, wow, great pass, Coutinho. It was just back passing, you know, and he wasn't really doing anything. And I guess for me, the biggest problem is, you know, how much money we spent him. And also, Valverde has not been able to get the best out of him, not even anything out of him, and figuring out what to do with him. You know, it's obviously clear that we need someone on the right side. So try putting Coutinho more on the right side, especially when Dembele is hurt now.
Yeah, and considering that we know Coutinho has quality, we know he's a very good player and he's inventive and he has this potential. So if you just put him in a place where he's not going to be in Messi's way and Messi's not going to be in his way, with Dembele unavailable, why not?
Exactly, why not? And that's what they should have tried to do in this Rio match, you know, trying to get him for other matches on the right side. Because again, Brian, if he's on the right side, he's going to have less defenders in front of him where he can take that defender 1v1. You know, having him link up with Semedo could work, you know, but they have to practice that. Now, having everyone on the left side again, Alba, Coutinho, Suarez, you know, always shading that side, and then Messi, you're just bringing the defense there. Now, remember, when Dembele comes in the second half, obviously you see what happens. We score 2 goals, we open it up. Rio doesn't know where to focus, and now Messi can run free. I mean, that is the key to winning these really important matches. But, like, why don't we just start off with that?
Right.
I mean, I want to win 4-0 and just make it easy. Why do we have to make it so stressful? I don't understand Valverde's ideas with this.
Right. What's with all the suspense? Just get to it.
Exactly.
Stop holding out on us.
Yeah. And also, when we are on the right, we play more primo. Right. And that's what we love to see. We want to see these passing, these combos, the back and forth going from left to right. That's what makes us fall in love with Barca football. And I just feel like he's so stubborn in what he wants to do. I think he thinks that in the other formation, we're more defensively sound. But if we're winning 4-0, we score 3-0, we can just play in front of us and we don't have to worry about the other team.
Right. A good defense is a strong offense.
Correct. Who said that? I don't know, Michael Jordan or something?
Many people.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are saying that a good defense is a strong offense. Also, you know, I think Dembele can also be accredited for helping with the penalty as well. Because it was Semedo who got taken down. But again, he was there because of all those great runs he was making and through balls that Dembele was passing to him. I logged 3 in my notes: 50th minute, 53rd minute, 62nd minute, same run, same pass, And every time it worked.
Again, because it's spread thin. I mean, that is the thing, right? They don't, Rayo doesn't have a person back there that can match up with the speed of Semedo or Dembele because they're so hyper-focused on Messi and Suarez, right? So now all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, we're playing on that side. We got to figure that out. And that opened up the other side and it just makes it easier for everyone. That's why I just don't understand. Work smarter, not harder.
Right. And you know, you still have Alba bombing in on the left doing winger duty. So exactly. You have the left side covered.
I just don't get it. I mean, we see it time and time again. Just think about all the last games, you know, where we were at a stalemate. Dembele comes on the right, and all of a sudden we have clear opportunities, right? Clear scoring opportunities where the defense is spread thin, and we actually score. I mean, the third goal was a thing of beauty. It was just tic-tac-toe going back and forth. Rayo didn't know where to go. They didn't know if to slide tackle, to stand up, to jump there. And then we scored the goal, and it was just a really nice goal. And that's because of the spacing. I mean, you can clearly see that Messi occupies two guys. He takes them away. But if you're playing on the right side, then Suarez gets free. I mean, you saw Suarez on that run. All he had to do was a tap it. And that's not asking much for a number nine.
Right. And Rakitic was the one running into the box to make the final assist as well. And if that were Coutinho making that run on the right side, I think it would have worked out more or less the same.
It's a good point.
Maybe.
Good point.
I don't know. I mean, Rakitic is maybe a little more selfless than Coutinho.
That is true. But also just the idea of just completing that run and taking that run, I think Coutinho would do the same thing. And again, it's just, why are we trying to reinvent this? There's no purpose for this. You know, this is, you see what's clearly working. And especially when we are doing that, we are dancing out there with the ball. We look more electric, right? And also Rayo couldn't do anything on the counter because they could not get the ball from us because we were spreading it through balance and so forth. Again, I just, you know, especially we talked last episode about the hub. Clearly, they should be able to use the GPS and just see the defense spread through, you know, spread out and just seeing all the clear opportunities we get when we attack on the right.
Yeah, come on, hub, innovate. Now, the Dembele injury, I mean, it was good that Dembele came in at the beginning of the second half because it showed that Valverde recognized he needed to make some kind of a change. He made the change early rather than waiting until the 60th minute, the 65th minute to make a change. But I was a little disappointed that it was Arthur who he came on for.
Yeah, I totally agree. But do you think that maybe him sitting down for that long contributed to this injury? You know, we'll never know. But, you know, we know that Dembele has a history of hamstring problems, you know, especially he's a sprinter, right? So he's going to have this problem. Again, like I said, Brian, I would just prefer to start him and let him go and then sub him at halftime and switch him for Malcolm. He is, as we've seen all through the last 4 months, he is our most impactful player when he's on there. He makes a huge difference. And now, you know, what they were saying in the news is that most likely he's going to sit out against Lyon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because it's a genuine injury. It's not just a little bit of, I don't know, a bad feeling.
No, it's a hamstring strain. It's a first degree, right? So a first grade hamstring strain. So it's obviously something that they took the test. It's been evaluated. It's been confirmed. So it's not just like a knock. He could play. Like but again, you don't want to. He's been out 3 months already, basically, with the same type of injury. So you don't want to chance, especially for the last push that we have. So I can definitely see us being more conservative on this side, sitting him down. But again, that just means Coutinho, and we're going to be on the left side again with this. We're going to see the first half against Rayo, against Lyon.
Right.
Unfortunately.
A stronger team than Rayo, by the way.
Yes, exactly. And they're going to have their best players in there as well. So.
Sure they are, yeah. Yeah, I think that sitting down, well, I don't think that Dembele was anticipating that he would play. Or if he did, it wouldn't be until later. And I didn't see any footage of him warming up at all during the first half. So they might have just sprung it on him, and it was maybe a bad call on, well, ultimately Valverde's part, because if he's not properly warmed up and he goes out there and he does some of the runs that he was making, it's not uncommon that you would strain your hamstring.
Exactly. And the other thing too is I just think the theory of what Valverde tried to do this match, I think, is the wrong way to go. You know, fortunately for us, Brian, we do have great players, and we were able to turn around because, you know, Atletico won earlier So they got the 3 points, and we still need to keep them at bay with this 7-point lead. Again, you know, one of those things that's really great about our team is that we're able to come back very often. And we've done that, I think, 6 times or 5 times this season where the other team has scored first and we've come back to win.
Yeah, that seems to be sort of a pattern for us this year. But this was also a somewhat, there was a little bit of history that got made. Messi broke yet another record. He became the second all-time leader in La Liga appearances. Before this match, he was tied with Andres Iniesta with 442, and now he's at 443.
I mean, he's going to shatter this record because the leader is Xavi with 503. So that's just one season, essentially. But again, what can you say? The consistency, not only of Iniesta and Xavi, but obviously Messi just throughout the years for La Liga. I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, he's going to have basically every record when it's done. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah, he's absolutely going to shatter that record. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Also, this is peripheral, but do you know which player has played the most minutes for Barcelona this season?
Interesting. My first gut would be Rakitic.
Right. You would think that because we've been harping on so much about how he's just been getting kind of overplayed. And he's actually the fifth highest minute holder in the season overall. At the top is Gerard Piqué. Out of their 42 games, he's made 39 appearances and played all 90 minutes. He's played a total of 3,330 minutes, and I think it's doing him well because lately he has just been playing out of his mind, defensively especially, but now in this game, he puts it in the net, completely unmarked, running into the box, beautiful ball in from Messi, heads it into goal. I mean, Piqué is having a banner year right now.
Definitely. I think he would be the defender of the year for La Liga for sure because of what he's done. And as we've talked about, we think he has been the best player for Barca consistency wise for the whole month of March or for the whole month of February. That was so difficult for us. He was he was steadfast back there. He led the defense with Ter Stegen and Longley. But I mean, he has been masterclass, like you said. And I personally did not expect that. I definitely thought he was going to have some lapses just because of his age. But we've needed him because of the Umtiti injury and also obviously Vermaelen, who's always hurt.
Right.
Sorry to laugh about that. But but Piqué has been super steady. And again, he's righted the ship and he is so experienced. You know, he knows he's seen it all, basically. You know, he's seen it all. And so he's so smart in defending. And again, in that goal, which is a really nice goal, he was completely open, unmarked. It was a nice little play that they ran. They kind of almost did like a basketball screen and kind of go type of thing. And it was a great ball by Messi, and Piqué hammered it home. So again, I would say all in all, Piqué has been our best player consistency wise from January, from the break until now.
Yeah. And looking ahead, you know, we're pretty preoccupied right now thinking about the midweek Champions League match with Lyon. But next weekend in La Liga, we go up against Real Betis, which is always fun. So we're playing them next Sunday. So we'll get a little bit of a break. You know, we got the game on Wednesday with Lyon, so then got a few days off of rest before playing against Betis. And, you know, Betis they've had sort of mixed results the last few games, couple wins, couple losses, a draw.
Yeah, that should be. And they're playing at Sevilla as well, I believe. So,
right.
And they only play three defensive backs. And so they're completely wide open. And especially at home, they're even more open.
Yeah, so, they'll just run after it.
So remember earlier in the season in November, they did beat us 4-3, but they basically ran us out of the park. I mean, we were chasing the game from the first minute on. So it's going to be even more difficult in Sevilla, especially with the fans that they have. They've had some unlucky runs. They just got knocked out of Europa League. The coach has been a little bit under the microscope over there because they demand more from the team, especially with the style that they're playing. So again, it's going to be a tough match, but again, all eyes are focused on Wednesday. We need to get that win and push through because I think the Champions League draw is on that Friday. So we'll know too who we're playing and the dates as well.
Yeah. So it won't be easy against Betis, but first things first, Champions League. And we'll be talking about both of those next Monday. Thanks to Max Bleuer today. This has been a production of Barca Talk, written by Gabriel Quiroga and Brian Henderson. Editing and music by Brian Henderson. Social media and promotion by Gabriel Quiroga. Help send a deserving young player to Barcelona Soccer Camp this summer in Houston and support the show through Patreon at barcatalk.net. Until next time, Visca Barça.